What's going on out there right now, Daryl? People are upset. The people are, they're going to revolt, Daryl.
They're going to revolt. They're going to want heads to roll. People want heads on a platter right now. And I mean, I don't blame them. If you remember, TK, if we go back in time to whenever the first time they started talking about, you know, releasing the Greenbelt properties, and I wish we had a staff that could go back and find these clips and put them up, because I guarantee you, I was like, gee,
the viewers
I wonder.
Can do that themselves. It's in one of the videos.
Yeah, go
from
find
the
last it.
Year.
Yeah, go find it. And while you're doing that, like, hit the subscribe button, because. Like, there's actually a decent amount of people that watch this show now, TK, and listen to this show, but most of them
have it playing on their
have no fingers,
iPhone.
Apparently, somehow. I don't know how they're watching, but they don't have enough energy left at the end of the day to press the subscribe button. But in case you do have some energy, right there, press it right there.
Yeah.
And
we're going to have a contest. But it's only going to be applicable to those who are subscribed.
Is it like you're going to win the money from the swear jar contest?
Well, folks, you hear it here first.
Daryl, apparently I have a problem.
Daryl's swearing just way too much. So we're going to start a swear jar.
Swearing
we'll
way
ask you guys
too much.
To keep track. And a winner will receive all the money in the swear jar. How much per swear? I was thinking about that.
I don't know. What do you think?
I don't want to set the bar too high.
Yeah, like I don't want to go broke.
I don't really
this.
Have a lot of expectations that
I
you're
already
gonna be
make
able to
a
contain
nice
yourself.
Monthly donation to the show already, so like
let's go with like $2 per swear.
$2 per swear. This is gonna get rich, man. I can't hold back. That's all right, let's see what happens.
$2,
because there's a lot of people
to win the money in the swear jar, otherwise you're in trouble.
Well, I mean, unless of course you tell us in the comments that like this isn't a problem for you and like don't hold back, because I can't fucking hold TK, I can't.
But the people who have an issue can subscribe right now, and then they can win some money out of it. So then now nobody will have a problem with it. Problem solved.
Or they can fuck off. All right, TK, we got two great guests today, and
I know.
I wish I didn't do that. I didn't mean to do that, but there's big stuff to talk about. I mean, what the hell do we know about the Greenbelt other than the minute they said it, TK? If you go back in time, you'll hear me go, bro, like, who owns all these properties? I wonder what's going to be.
A few episodes on that, yeah.
Right? But
everybody
like,
did. That was, like, pretty common. Like, they were putting it out there.
This is not rocket science, but, I mean, let's be honest. The majority of the people are not thinking in that direction. They're not even thinking, quite honestly.
Well,
but most of them aren't like, whoa, it must be, like, a big developer.
Who are the people? Who are the people who are actually making the most amount of noise? Are they the people who live in the areas that were released from the Greenbelt?
Ooh, that's an interesting. No, they're not. No, because their property just went up, did it?
Their property values just doubled, tripled, whatever.
If they live there, I guess, depending
on
where
they own land
there.
Because all these are all rural lands. None of them, they don't have a 50-foot lot. They all got.
But this is no surprise to any of these people, is it, TK? Like, were any of these people?
I want to save that part of the conversation for when our guest comes. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
But
okay. So
anyway, so we're not pumping the market right now. The market's going down. I'm 100% like aware of this.
The market's going down.
6.5% decrease in prices from May. So that's pretty substantial to talk about, right? We're having 6.5% from May, the 2 months, right? So if you add up the total months of decline right now from the peak in May, it would have been 6.5%.
The peak was May now?
Yeah.
Which peak is that?
2023.
We got a new peak.
2023 peak.
Peak.
So now I'm selling houses about
man.
4 to 7% below peak. You know what I mean? This is just how it is out there right now.
Secondary peak.
You're 4 to 7 below peak, right?
Bruh.
Look, man, you could have been 10% below peak, all right, if you hadn't listened to me. Luckily, you only ended up 5.2% below peak. So, Daryl, I noticed that there's a lot of real estate agents watching the show.
Yeah, it seems like they enjoy the knowledge that they gain from you.
Absolutely. Not from me, from the guest. The ones who are out there doing it, right? And
nobody even makes it as far as the guest.
Did you know that our team at Frank Leone Associates is basically hiring agents like in all the different areas in Ontario right now.
Wow, where are you getting them from? There's like no pool of real estate agents out
there's
there
like
right
barely
now.
Any to choose
there's barely
from,
any
know?
Agents.
Yeah, but like
that's
to
cool.
me, best decision I ever made was joining the team. So I figured if someone else wanted to take advantage of that, I should let them know. Maybe use the channel, and they should go to jointeamleo.com.
That's a good idea. Link in the description below. So, but if you're selling right now,
take
don't you kind of, aren't you fucked? Don't you have to sell? Like, isn't that the deal? Isn't that the rule? Isn't that what everybody says? Like, it's a slow market. Like, things shouldn't be really on the market. That's why there's no inventory right now. It's seasonal. This is normal.
I don't think that's just that. I think it's also people don't think it's a good time, right?
Don't think it's a good time.
People don't think it's a good time to.
It's not a good time. People are scared. The news is bad because of people like us and thumbnail makers, TK. Yeah. We're fucking everything up. Everybody's fucking everything up. You can't. Do you ever click on anything positive, like with rainbows and lollipops? You're like, wow, that looks cool. I should click on that. No, you click on disaster bomb.
Hold on. If it benefits me, then yes.
If it benefits you, rainbow.
Yeah.
If it's your own thumbnail.
If it's just like, you know, father learns how to get children to do exactly what he says and celebrates with a weekend barbecue with his friends.
This.
I'm like,
just let them run amok like me. Right? Okay. So what we're not going to talk about today for sure, because it's the Canadian real estate show, of this stuff will have an impact on it, is like, did you see that big mushroom cloud in Russia?
You know what, Daryl? No.
I bet you did.
I didn't.
You didn't?
I'm not following the mushroom clouds in Russia thread.
That probably we should ignore completely. Perfect. What about the fact that Russia blew up one of Ukraine's biggest ports?
Again, not following the war in Russia lately.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, you got a lot of things going on.
Desensitized to the war, but, the World War III.
The war is out there right now. There's things that are going on. You know,
no effect.
Hasn't stopped. You know, they haven't drawn the white flag yet.
I forgot. I didn't even write this down, but I'm pretty sure there was a gigantic default in China again. But like, we'll just ignore that like we did Evergrande.
Well, Evergrande was so like overrated.
Overrated. It wasn't the first domino or anything. It was just this overrated event that led to nothing.
Lehman Brothers. 2021.
Lehman Brothers bullshit.
Didn't happen.
Look, aliens over there. Look over there. Speaking of aliens, there was aliens that invaded Peru. Like, we're not going to talk about that because that can't have an effect on civilization.
Look, do those aliens want to buy a property in Toronto or not?
I think they want Peru, obviously.
Because this is my top concern, okay?
So don't everybody rush into Peruvian real estate right now. Did I say that right? Is that a thing?
Peruvian real estate, yeah.
Is that right?
I mean, they have real estate in Peru.
What about the coup in Niger? Nah, we won't touch on that because it's the Canadian real estate show. And these things will never have an effect on us here, especially in Toronto, the center of the world. But we should bring on at least our first guest.
We've got our first guest
right
now.
On.
Talk some business.
I like this guy. I like this guy's videos. See, when I got kicked off of Twitter or X, I was forced onto TikTok. And this guy's videos, I love them. Like, they're very cheerful and they're very informative, and I don't know, something was, I was drawn to him. TK, you're not on TikTok, so you don't know. How's it going
guys?
It's going great,
Jason. Nice to meet you.
I appreciate that.
Sorry TK was late, but he doesn't really care about other people's time. He's a realtor, you know.
I thought I was right on time.
Yeah, you were right.
Realtors
on time,
are supposed to always be on time. What?
I'm 15 minutes
They're
early, Lombardi time.
He's early.
Yeah. The show starts at 11. See? How are you?
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. I'm good. I'm up north at my cottage, and I'm in the car because Zoom meetings are never great when you have little ones around. They're very difficult, right? You just can't get any peace. So I'm like, you know what? I'll take the call. I'll do this in the car. So
good
thanks
idea.
For having me.
Well, thanks. The isolation booth.
Yeah, this is my isolation booth. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
how's it going?
It's going.
We heard there's some problems
in
the real estate market. So we were kind of like, geez, we better talk to somebody. We need to find out.
Talk to somebody. I hope I'm the right guy. Yeah.
I'm like a therapist today.
I'll be your voice of somewhat reason. I mean, you know, it's interesting. So, you know, I come from a kind of a different world. I'm not a realtor.
And
so I've been a lender basically entire career, right? So I was a private lender for like the last 10 years. Before that, I exited a company. And so I figured, what the hell should I do with my life? And so I've been lending out money. And it gives me kind of a market insight that a lot of people don't have. And then we, about a year and a half ago, we launched a startup called lenderbidding.com, which is a platform. It's the only auction platform for mortgages. And we specialize in the private mortgage industry. So what that does, allow if someone needs a private mortgage, or we have 53 of the biggest lenders in Canada, and they bid on the mortgage. So we're kind of disrupting that landscape, but it gives me market access. You know, we see hundreds of deals a month, and it gives you insight into what's going on in kind of the scariest part of the market. So it's we people like who are,
which is the scariest, you know, very, part of the market. Yeah, so, 'cause I mean, if you're in it, you probably feel like your part is the scariest part, right? Whatever you're in.
Yeah.
Right now.
So the scariest part that from our point of view is, so imagine you've got someone who they're rejected from a bank. They bought something last year, reconstruction. They maybe it's a rental property or two that they thought, you know, was going to double in value, and now it's worth less than they paid for it. And the bank's like, yeah, sorry, you don't qualify. These people have to close, and now they have to go somewhere to close it. So they're like, well, my only option now is to go to a private lender. And the private mortgages are, they're interest only. So most people don't know. They're 1 year term, they're interest only, and they're very expensive. Like a private mortgage, you know, right now on a first mortgage, you're looking like 9.5%, 10%. And then there's 2% fee from the lender. There's a broker fee. So these things can total up to like 14, 15% interest. Now that, you know, on $1,000 isn't much, but on $1 million in interest only, you're talking like 150 grand you're throwing away just on interest and fees over a 1 year period. So you've got a lot of people that are in these situations where they have no other option but to do this. And what's scary is that you're seeing people who didn't plan ahead, and they bought two or three projects. They now literally can't afford to close them. They're worth less than they were when they bought. So now not only do they have to get a private, most of the time there's not enough equity for even a private lender to look at the deal. Right. So people are losing their deposits. The things aren't closing. It's this like this cascading effect where it's not being talked about enough, but we see it literally every single day. People calling and saying, I need a second mortgage on my house because I bought an investment property and I need to close that, and it didn't appraise for as much. So now they're using their home as a piggy bank for high, like a higher interest. They're sucking the equity to that to put into another thing. It's pretty bad out there. And honestly, like, people don't really have an idea of just how bad it is.
Well, and I think that's one level of it, right? Like, that's kind of the stupid mom and pop investor FOMO layer of it. But you have the, like, what we keep talking about, right, TK, is like the normal middle income person who's in their 50s, who's like on the cusp of losing their job, or even if they have a steady job, like their wages haven't increased enough for their mortgage renewal that's coming up. And so now it becomes like, do we want to spend 68% of our like leftover money on this fucking house that's falling apart now? Or like, what are we going to do? Do we want to move to Calgary? Do we want to go to Saskatchewan? Do we want to rent? If we want to rent, we can't find a fucking place to, oh, this jar is going to fill up, TK. We can't find a place to rent. Like, everything is a disaster, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
it's, there's yeah, multiple layers. You're 100% right. It's multiple layers. So yeah, you're right. So the people who are getting crushed right now are definitely the mom and pop investors. Everyone who thought, you know, real estate only goes up forever. What's scary is getting calls from people who, you know, like our agents will see people who they were on variable. And I think that's the thing that's the scariest. So you have people who are literally panicking. They bought properties for way too much. You know, they FOMO'd into even just a property a couple of years ago, and they're at, you know, 1.7%. And now they're coming up for renewal, and the, you know, they're with a bank, and RBC or Scotia is like, yeah, we're happy to renew at 6.5%. And they're like, 6.5%, but I can't afford to carry this. Like, there's no way. And that's just starting to happen now, right? Renewals are just starting to come up. If people are on a 3 year and a 5 year, like, I think 2024, 2025 is going to be really the most impactful time to see what actually happens in the market in terms of like just mass chaos. Because unless things change, unless there's a dramatic shift in terms of the rates, people are really going to struggle. Like I know recently, I mean, you guys know, it used to be the 30% rule, right? It was like, don't have more, you know, your 30% is what you should spend on your house. They're now saying, well, you can't use that metric anymore. It's now like 50, like, so what's that number end up going to be? Like, where are we going to land? Is 80% a good number? So you have 20% to basically eat food and that's it. You can't afford a car anymore. Like, it's become so silly. And like you said, what are the options for these people? Because if you have a mortgage left and you're on a fixed income, or like you said, incomes just have not grown at the pace of real estate. How do you make those payments up? So your options are, yeah, I've got to sell it, maybe rent something. The problem is the rents now, you know, a house in anywhere is $3,000, $3,500, $4,000.
The worst townhouse.
You mentioned Alberta, right? Calgary is exploding. And the problem is, I mean, this is the issue that we saw throughout all of Ontario during the pandemic, is that everywhere there was like affordable housing absolutely exploded. And then they also saw the largest corrections. So you saw places like Hamilton and Fort Erie and Brantford
Bancroft,
right?
Durham.
Right. You saw 40%, 35, 40, 50%.
95%.
Lift. 95%, right? And then what happens? Well, people were buying houses in Fort Erie for $1 million, and now they're having a hard time selling them for 700, 750. Yeah. But they've got a mortgage of 800, right?
Right.
It's like, what are you doing in that situation? How long do you want to float that upside down house? Like, how long are you going to keep that at 6.4%? You're like, I've got no equity in it. I'm paying, my mortgage is up, you know, 5%. What am I supposed to do?
Right. But somehow there's like a lineup of people that are ready to come in and like have somehow enough money to do it.
Yeah.
Right. Like this is still happening.
The people that I'm like seeing buying right now, they just desperately need housing. And to Jason's point, they can't rent a place like reasonably. And so like they need a place to live. It's not like the people buying right now are like, it's a great time to buy and I'm going to invest in this market like we had before. Those people are all gone. Yeah. The only people buying right now are just like, look, Jason, I'm, you know, moving into Toronto from Calgary and, you know, I need to own a home because renting right now seems crazy, or I already sold my place, or, you know, my landlord sold his place, or like, it's like a necessity to move. So that there's always going to be people buying, but nobody right now I'm talking to is like, and all the offers I'm dealing with and the negotiations on the seller side, talking to the buyer agent and the buyer side, like nobody's easy to get money from right now. Nobody's buying carelessly. Everybody's very cautious. They're very slow to act. They're very, you know, methodical. You know, it's taking weeks sometimes for them to even make an offer. Counters are taking 2 or 3 days to go back and forth.
Because things are changing fast.
So scared and they're just, and but they scared. Need a house. I got one situation where, you know, because of cameras and stuff like that, we can see the lady's pregnant. It's like, she's about to burst. And this has been a while now that she's been coming. So it's like, we know they need to buy like that baby's coming soon, you know, but they're still not like jumping into it. You know what I mean? So it's like, these are the situations out there right now, right? People are nervous. They're
scared. The math doesn't work. And when the math doesn't work, it's like, look, the math didn't work before, but numbers were going up. Right. So now you don't know if they're going up. So the numbers not working is a concern for more people these days, but okay. I hate that we had to bring on another guest today, but like, we've got this whole green belt thing going on that's really important. And this guy, I see him on TikTok also, and he's like just slamming forward over this whole thing. So I had to invite him on today, and he's been waiting for a while. So we're going to get back to this. I promise you, because the whole thing comes back to this whole discussion. Like, it doesn't change, but I really want to get some insight into what the hell's going on with this green belt thing, because it's a bloody disaster. So I'm gonna bring him in. I don't know his name, he wouldn't tell me. Gundo Bad Ontario, but he's got some great videos as well. I asked him his name, he's like Gundo Bad.
It's a TikTok day of guests. That's it, everybody. We're
That's
finding
it.
You online.
That's it. It's the new.
We're bringing you on the show.
This is the new age. This is the Canadian real estate show 2.0 version. Yeah. Right. The TikTok.
You want to come on our show?
Start a TikTok account.
You better be on TikTok. Yeah.
Talk about some cool stuff.
my wife like was laughing when I said, I'm gonna, a couple months ago, I'm like, I'm gonna create a TikTok.
And then all of a sudden these months videos, ago.
Yeah, like I my first video I think I posted like maybe 3.5-4 months ago, and I don't know why.
It's a natural
people
can't afford
the
any
wife
Wi-Fi,
doesn't understand
though.
Either, but people somehow are enjoying it. Is my reception not good?
If not that's good okay. was an understatement, then
it's
a, it would
it's
be 85%. Not good. But it seems to be
really?
Better
oh,
than
God.
Gundobad's because he's not even like
your content is
top notch,
the truth,
man.
Right? It's that's what it is. So when you speak the truth, then that. people will appreciate it, and so they don't feel like you're just trying to like pump the market or give them, you know, misleading information. Everybody knows what's going on.
Are you in the green belt right now? Like in the heart
what?
Of
I,
the
I'm
forest?
Not. I thought the best thing to do would be I'm calling from Silvio De Gaspar's lot. I
there
thought
you
that'd
go.
Be the best.
Which
spot
one?
To,
like, isn't
to do
the
it?
Whole,
yeah.
Like,
this
there's
is
a
it
few.
Here.
So you're in Ontario.
It's,
okay.
Yeah. No, I'm in Ontario. Yeah. I'm up north, but
it's kind of hard to say that and not like it not be in fact true.
It's true.
Like he did work somewhere, probably where you are right now.
Yeah.
So here, I mean, I'll give you my take as a wait for Gundo. I mean, I made a video about it. Look, the reality is like, yeah, I'm all for conservation and green space, and you know, you get both sides of the equation. But I'm also for the how many Canadians that I see and how many people I see in the comments. Like, you know, some of my videos have almost 1 million views, and the ones that really resonate with people are the ones that are like, this is insane. Canadian housing is broken. Like, you know, we got to fix this problem. People are like, I can't afford to rent. I can't afford to rent and eat. I'll never be able to afford a house. To me, that is depressing.
Yeah.
Right. That to me is really tough. And I've been fortunate in my life. I don't know how I'd feel if I was 21 years old, finishing university, having to start now. It would be depressing to think, oh, my first house is going to cost me, you know, $1.5 million in
this
Toronto.
Is my daughter, like, right now.
We got a solution. We're just going
right.
to just release
open
everything
the
from green the
green
belt,
maybe
and just
we'll
build 50,000 homes
it
overnight. It's
right.
Just
and the thing is,
happen.
I don't. Yeah. And like, and that's not going to fix it either. Like that, that's for sure. But I think the more we see going forward, look, if we really wanted to fix it, like if we're being honest, if you take a look at the fees and the taxes on a new condo, it's 30% of the price are fees and taxes. That's 30% that goes to the government.
More.
So on $1 million condo, 300K that we know of right off the bat. So if they want to really like, they want to help affordable housing, how about drop some of the fees, drop some of the, you know, these taxes on these things for a little while. That will help, right? Incentivize the builders slightly.
But hold on a sec. What about all those beautiful statues that we're forced to put in front of the buildings? Don't you guys all love those? Like those are expensive.
All of the breakdown, there's an article in the Globe yesterday, and he did the breakdown of it. I mean, it's pretty wild. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, they're just going to build like on the green belt, they're going to build like mansions and that type of thing. Look, I hope they don't. I hope it's a bunch of townhouses and quote unquote affordable, even though these days, you know, $1.5 million is considered affordable, which is kind of scary because I mean, guys, let's be honest. 7 years ago, it was half. Like if we're just sort of talking no bullshit, reality is, you know, 7 years ago is not that long. Like 6-7 years ago, these houses were half the price. Even if you adjust that for inflation, I mean, it's nothing. Like at 2%, you're talking 12%, 14% in terms of like from a value. These asset prices are completely broken. It's gotten way, way too crazy, way too fast. I say build as much as you possibly can. Open it up as much as you possibly can. The one thing that politicians aren't talking about, whatever side you like, red or blue or orange, whatever, they never talk about these taxes and these fees. One side talks about, you know, we need to build more housing. The other side says, you know, there's too much red tape. Okay, well, like talk about the fees and the tax. It's one thing they don't talk about. They should talk about it because it does stop a lot of builders from building, and it stops a lot of builders from wanting to build rental specific as well. If that's what we need affordable, there's no money in it.
Like for sure.
You know, developers don't want to build a rental specific building and make no money.
It doesn't make it easier, that's for sure. We had Gundo Bad.
Where's our new guest? Let's get him introduced.
And he maybe he
Gundo
doesn't agree with you. Jason.
Hello, gentlemen. Welcome. I'm just surprised because I was informed this is like a totally naked podcast. Like we were all going to be naked.
Well, we're getting there. We were waiting for you before we started. We're going to hand out the poker hands now.
Awesome. Awesome.
Welcome.
If you're okay with the Greenbelt fiasco and you think it's good to hand over the keys to the developers, then you have to take off your socks now.
Already off.
Baby. I'm not wearing pants, so
right.
We're good.
Oh man.
How you doing?
Gundabad, what's happening?
Nothing, guys. Good to talk to you. Good to talk to you, good gentlemen, on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, I love your videos on what's going on with the green belt.
What's going on with the green belt? I mean,
yeah, tell us what's going on because
it's been a little quiet in the last 2 months now. You know, like they've just kind of been a little bit of environmental stuff from the federal side, but the provincial government's been pretty quiet. So other than this week,
it's been pretty quiet, guys. Well, I think you know the Ford family has been burying dead bodies up there for quite a while. So you probably need to get to the bottom of that for sure. But I'm sure I don't know what you guys have been talking about so far, but I mean, obviously, you know. It's the whole thing about these 7,400 acres that they have essentially rezoned, taken out of the Greenbelt and rezoned and allowed for, you know, residential real estate development. So it's quite the interesting fiasco. You know, the Auditor General's report came out, and excuse me if you guys have already been talking about this, but
we waited for you. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Well, good old Bonnie Lysak, the lady who basically took down, you know, McGuinty and his chief of staff back in the day for the liberal, you know, gas plant scandal. She's done it again, this time with the conservative premier. So it's pretty crazy. I mean, she's had basically 14 bullet points in her report. And the gist of it to me, after reading through it, is this land is not needed to meet housing targets. There's an enormous amount of land that's approved for development right now. I think between Pickering and Hamilton, if you look at all the land that's approved, greenfield land that's approved for development right now, yep. It's almost 300 square kilometers.
Can you clarify that for me? Because I would like to know where this approved land is and who, like, is it available for sale?
Yeah, this is like stuff on the open market. So if you look around the fringes of all the existing built up areas, there is a lot of land in between those areas and where the green belt starts. There's also something called the white belt, right? Which is another band of land. That's basically the buffer land.
They just made that term up like a few years ago.
Yeah, when's
so
white belt? I never even heard
belt.
Of that.
Okay. White belt's like, we're not quite in the green belt, but we're not really in those urban boundaries, you know, but we're coming. We're heading to a neighborhood near you.
What can you build in there?
Exactly. See? So this land, I mean, it's there. Like you can look at the Ministry of Housing website for this kind of information. And also the crazy number of units that are approved for development, by the way. There's, I think, 1.25 million units of housing. I'm not sure if that's in Ontario or specifically in Southern Ontario, that where the developer owns the land, they could use shovels to break ground immediately and build it, but it's not getting built.
Permitted? Like permitted, ready to go?
Permitted and ready to go, baby, ready to go. So anyways, that was one of the findings of Bonnie Lysak. And she basically also got all into the process and how these 7,400 acres were selected. And basically what she's saying is the chief of staff directed, you know, the technocrats within the government to specifically select these parcels that were owned by these two companies who seem to be buddies of Doug Ford. And they
shocking
ridiculous increase in valuation, right? Once you rezone lands, she claims it's $8 billion, right? If you take land that's in the Greenbelt that's zoned for protection, either environmental or agriculture, and then you rezone it for residential land development, that is the holy grail of residential real estate development, right? If you can buy land that is zoned for agriculture or environment, and get, you know, one of your buddies in office to rezone it for you. Oh my God. Like, obviously you can make a margin. And, you know, this the other guest here, Jason, was making some very valid points about, you know, how expensive it is with fees, right, to develop these projects, but there still are margins there. You can make the margins there, but the holy grail is really to get land rezoned. And this is what these two companies got, man.
But they not only rezoned like this, like the speed. Okay, because normally, like if you buy a piece of land that's agricultural like that, like you have to take a decade of rezoning to get it to that point. If like, you know, civilization is even coming towards it at that point and you can get some form of servicing done, right?
Well, good luck financing it also.
And
right? most lenders will not touch agricultural land. Like you literally need to buy that thing cash. You're making zero. Gosh. There's no yield on that, right?
It's if a
you're
long buying play.
Agricultural land. You get like a VTB from a farmer. And even that's not ideal because, you know, like, so it's expensive for sure. Gundo, I've actually, your videos popped up in my For You page and you make great videos. So it's actually great having you on here, but
Jason, were they my naked videos? Were they in my naked videos or my
which for you?
You're naked. I think you looked like you're in a I looked like you're in a cabin. Yeah, I didn't know where I was going, but yeah. But you know, the thing is right now too that a lot of people don't talk about, and I know because I have a lot of friends that are developers are in the developer game, and it's right now because of the rate environment, it's too expensive to build. So that's the other issue that you've got is, so it's not just the fees and like all these other things that the government sort of slaps on it. It is the fact that most developers, they finance these things. They don't go all cash. Like TAC is not going to go in and just do this. They usually have a finance partner, but like, look what you're borrowing at today. Like you're not borrowing money at 3% or 2%. You're borrowing money at
see what it looks
6.5, 7%, 8%, right? Yeah,
forget 6.5, 7.
That's the VTB.
Yeah, please. You're looking at and forget about if you want that nice rate that you're talking about, you have to put in 65% equity.
Correct.
Right? Like it's a whole different ball game. If you want to put in 25%, get used to the number 12. Okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yep. Oh yeah. And a lot of the time you're dealing, you know, depending on the scale, like the reality is TAC is not going to private money, but some of these smaller developers, guys that are building, you know, maybe 100 units or 50 or 100, 150 is like doing a townhouse thing. They'll go private with a smaller, like a Firm Capital, let's say, like a, you know, a big private lender, and it's expensive. Right. And that's where you're seeing like developers going bankrupt. These guys can't afford to finish these projects. It's happening all over the place.
Sure.
There's not enough money in it. It's become so expensive. The one thing I made a video about the Doug Ford situation, about the Greenbelt situation. I used it like that. There's a picture of him that's just the greatest picture of all time. He looks so sheepish. It's like the perfect, they got this still shot of him just like looking so shit, I got caught kind of thing. Like, this isn't a great look. The problem that I find, if you get past the shadiness, the one thing I will say is at least the two developers that are there, they're well-funded. They will be able to execute on these things. If you look at Degasperis and what they build and you look at the amount of homes that they build, these guys are big builders. They will eventually execute on this stuff. It just goes back to the fact that how they got there and should we be building there is the question that I think Gundo's been, you know, asking. And it's a very fair point. I mean, should they have gotten this land? Is there lots of land to develop? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest point actually that you could make, Jason, is because the issue with that other land that is tied up is it's not profitable at this point. That's why they're not putting a shovel in the ground. And that's what I think is the reason. And so the fact that they bought some of the land that was purchased 20 years ago for $15,000, $20,000 an acre, whatever it was back then, probably less. Now there's a huge spread that, you know, the developer can justify because the services that have to be put in and the amount of energy and time and just consultants that have to be brought in to be able to put this master plan community, which I'm very familiar with the Dufferin's Rouge Ag Preserve, just so you know, I've got a lot of information on what's happening there. And I'm telling you, it's a massive, massive, massive project. And they're making a lot of money off that. And that's why it's possible that they'll build that faster. That 7,400 acres will be built faster than another 7,400 acres scattered out throughout Southern Ontario, right? So
I think with the infrastructure servicing, though, if you looked at the city of Pickering and the mayor and all of the town council voted unanimously against the whole DRAP, you know, development plan, because it's going to be so damn expensive to try to get all the utilities and infrastructure out there, right? And yes, you know, developers do pay for the upfront cost for the development, but then the servicing of that infrastructure over time, that's what then falls on the, you know, the residents of Pickering. And if you've got this way spread out, you know, infrastructure sprawl, that just ends up raising taxes for everybody in the long term. So to even build that infrastructure out to these sites, it could take years. Like the numbers I've seen is like 4 or 5 years just to get.
That's minimum just to like even, yeah. Like so it's, they have to actually build another, they actually have to double the water treatment facility in Pickering. Like the water treatment facility alone isn't big enough. So like there is major things that have to happen before they could even get to those services.
But Pickering just started having its day, you know, like they got a GO station and people casino. Are putting in like towers and they've got crazy zoning over there all of a sudden. And the airport's getting redone.
It's the Las Vegas of Ontario.
Right. But now all of a sudden it's like, really? You can unlock the greenbelt? Like now people will be able to like buy something for cheaper over there. Like what we just got here, guys. Like what the fuck? Don't take this away from us. There's vested interest, believe me. Because no, seriously, if we all of a sudden have all these houses and all this sprawl again, like what happens? What happens when there is options? Like it kind of fucks things up for people that makes don't want more affordable. It to get fucked up.
Isn't that the goal?
But that was a headline this week. Was what the hell was it? I wrote it down. But basically, like they want to, you know, make more affordable housing without making the price of housing come down, right?
But there's only one way to do that.
There's a way to do that? How do you do that?
Well, I think that, well, it was always like the way that you used
unlock
to do it.
Unlock the green belt was the way like to
you
do
said,
it.
Pick, well, there you go. I think what it was is, listen, when, you know, 10, 15 years ago, when Toronto prices were still, you know, they were very cheap relative, but it's all relative. If you look at Pickering and Oshawa 10 years ago, to me, that's cheap house. Like it was always cheaper as you, the further you got out, right? I think the more you can build out, you're going to get cheaper housing around. The problem is that because it kind of stopped, the prices in the surrounding areas went up. Like you look at Barrie. Barrie is a perfect example. Barrie was the place where if you wanted to be commutable to Toronto and buy a quote unquote affordable house, I'm not even saying quote unquote, it was affordable. Barrie, like 7, 8, 10 years ago, you get a house in Barrie for $350,000-$400,000. That's pretty affordable. Like that's a decent house for a nice little cookie cutter, new build, 2-car garage house. Yeah. Now that house is at $1.1 million.
More.
$1.2 million.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And so I think that what stopped in that time, well, obviously we've seen a massive influx of immigration, right? And the thing with immigration is that Canada is built on immigration. Like my parents immigrated here, my in-laws immigrated here. Like immigration built this country. It's very needed. My only concern is that, and I've said this in so many of my videos, I think that you're setting people up for failure, bringing people here now without building things up first. Because what they don't tell you is that, you know, hospitals are overrun. The wait times are insane. Like, you know, you want to get an MRI? Okay, 9 months. You know, you want a surgery?
Yeah,
sure,
they're
going to
wait
you
out. Yeah, that's the rule here.
Right. It's exactly it, right? Like, these are the things that are terrifying. And then it's like, oh, yeah, you know, your average rent is $2,100 in Canada. Average home price is $760,000. They land here and people are like, I'm never going to be able to buy a house. And so I've made videos about this and it's in thousands of comments, people saying I was sold a false promise. I'm going back home. Like I can't make it here. They're going back to their original countries, which is to me is it's crazy. It's so depressing. Like imagine uplifting your entire house, like entire family from the Philippines, from India, moving here, saying I'm going to create a better life. They get here and they're like, I'm making minimum wage. I can't afford the rent. I can't afford to eat. I'm going back home. This is not a way to live. Like, this is crazy, right? And so I think that, and that's why I'm like really pro, just build as much as possible. Like right. Wherever you can do it, build it. Right. And I'm all for green space. Look, I mean, Canada does not have a lack of green space, right? Like we have a lot of green space. And I'm not saying that, you know, we should just plow everything down. But the reality is you have to build where people are going to want to buy. Otherwise, everyone would be building houses in Muskoka. That's not going to happen. You have to build, and the Greenbelt happens to be where there's infrastructure and close to other places, unfortunately. But I don't know. Gundo's going to disagree with me. But I, you know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of where my head is. But
yeah, Jason, you raise a lot of excellent points. I think one of the biggest variables that nobody talks about for some reason, including Doug Ford, is the demand side of the equation, which is the mass immigration. Like Trudeau, our immigration rate, as far as I can tell, is about 5 or 6 times higher than the United States on a relative basis. right? Our immigration target is around like 1.2% of our population every year. The U.S. historically over the last decade or two has been around 0.2 or 0.3% of its total population every year. So riddle me this. I've yet to hear someone explain this to me. How do you expand our infrastructure, like think traffic and road networks, five times faster on an annual basis in the United States? How do you expand our hospital network, our education network? How do you build five times the number of houses relative?
Bike lanes.
Bike lanes. Yeah. Well, it's like, do we have five times the electricians as the
United laneway States? Suites?
Five times the number of plumbers as the United States. It's absolutely crazy. I don't know if you guys have ever talked about the Century Initiative on your podcast, but that is the brainchild of the former head of McKinsey, Dominic Barton, who's good buddies. And this is not like a World Economic Forum necessarily conspiracy theory type of thing. This is this is a real organization.
You'll own nothing and
explain
you'll be
happy. Explain it to the viewers and listeners who don't know.
Don't you feel like that?
Well, fellow peasants, the Century Initiative is literally a nonprofit organization founded by Dominic Barton, the former global head of McKinsey, who I believe is or just was the Canadian ambassador to China. He's very good buddies with Trudeau. Him and his other buddy, who is a BlackRock finance bro, I think he runs like BlackRock in Canada. They came up, their brainchild was the Century Initiative, which is essentially, let's grow Canada to 100 million people as fast as humanly possible. And that's where all of these immigration targets are coming from.
No way.
In the Trudeau government. And it's absolutely nuts. So if Dominic Barton was here, he would say, listen, we need to start pursuing a like quantity over quality kind of strategy for Canada, you know, because in his mind, I've heard stuff from him. It's like, we need to compete with the United States. We need to compete with China. I mean, I would argue that Canada's whole strategy is a quality of life, not a quantity of life strategy. And that's why people love this place. But anyways, all of the immigration targets that Trudeau has is basically based on this philosophy.
See, this makes sense, actually. Like, do you know how, like we always say, like, what's the actual goal here? Like, we see what they say, but what they do doesn't really line up with what they say. But like this.
100 million people.
Yeah, if you're going for 100 mil, this makes a hell of a lot of sense because
that's a lot of fucking people.
There's 500,000 people that have come into the province right over the last 12 months. And there was a bit of a blip because I think there was a lower income in, you know, the previous year. But I think we built 65,000 units of housing during that same period. We do not have the capacity to build that many homes. It has nothing to do with land. You know, Jason made a few points about build anything anywhere. I really disagree with that from a planning perspective. I think that can end up very, very poorly. It can end up just wrecking, you know, municipal infrastructure and the tax situation, all that kind of stuff. The biggest, one of the huge variables here is we just can't build. We can't build any faster.
Even if we could, we just can't build. If we had permits, we couldn't get it built.
Well, but there's a few things, and I agree. Listen, you can't just build because, I totally agree with you. It would just destroy everything. And like from an infrastructure point of view, you know, when you look at how bad the highways are, like in terms of traffic, when you look at the hospitals, like, you know, I remember I had to take my son to SickKids not that long ago. And the craziest part was they had doctors on, they'd had no nurses. We had to wait 9 hours to get to see the doctor was like, we have doctors. I don't need nurses. We need nurses to help me with the procedure. He had something in his eye. You know, like we have a lack of all these different things, but yet we're putting more strain on it. Now, in terms of building, one thing that I don't know why it's not talked about more is like why we haven't really looked at modular. You look at places like Florida and a lot of these different states. I mean, they literally put a concrete slab. They throw modular homes on them. They're very cheap. You can put them up very quickly. Like there are options, but my concern is that how do we sustain that type of growth without any type of plan? Like, you know, when I read comments on videos of people saying I'm applying for MAID because I can't afford to live anymore.
Oh my God, that's
fucking depressing, guys. Like I'll tell you right now, as a human, that's something that should never ever happen. You should never see that. It's like, what the hell happened? That is even a thing, that it's gotten so crazy here that people are like, it's not worth living anymore because I can't live. You know, they're working two, three jobs for what? To rent an apartment and to barely afford food. one in five people going to food banks. Food banks, the highest levels they've ever been. What the hell happened? This is not the way it was, you know, 10 years ago, 7 years. This is not the way it was. It just wasn't like this.
But what the hell's wrong with all the people? What's wrong with all the people that are coming in now? Like, even in the last few months, like, we've brought in 500,000 people in the last 4 months. Like, what the fuck's wrong with them? Don't they have internet or like a cell phone plan? Like, don't they
currency exchange though, right? Everybody I talk to, it's just like, I'm making 4, 5, 6 to 1, whatever it is. And so they look at it like, either I'm going to come here to work and I'm going to send the money home, or I'm going to come here and that my idea is I'm going to have a better life because I hear that I'm making 4 or 5 times the way it is back home. So there's still lots of opportunity here. I know it's hard for us to imagine, right? But there's also people who don't need the quality of life that, you know, we all take for granted, right? They don't mind sharing a 3-bedroom apartment with 6 people. They don't mind doing those type of things to be able to sacrifice to get in. So I can see why. I don't think that there's like all the people who are coming to Canada right now are all, you know, miserable about being here.
No, but I think what it goes back to, so I agree, like some people, let's say, are having a great time. The issue is it goes back to the infrastructure, right? Like you look at schools, you've got 35 kids in a class. You look at hospitals in Toronto, there's like 24-hour wait times in the ER, you know, surgeries, like we mentioned, like MRIs, that type of thing. You know, you look at the U.S. has, you know, we have 10x the population, or sorry, they have 10 times the population, less landmass, and home prices are half of what they are. So something is wrong, right? Like it's just not
agreed.
Like,
agreed. We all want to live in one spot. Build,
exactly. That's a problem too.
Yeah, there's not enough housing in that one spot. Yeah. I can get you a great 4-bedroom house for $350,000.
Right. But I don't want to live in Timmins.
Saskatoon.
Yeah. Right. Saskatoon. Like that's exactly Temiskaming.
Great.
Like that's the thing is when you look at, and now look what's happening to Calgary. So Calgary's now seeing that. Calgary's now seeing the Barries and the Fort Eries of what Toronto was. Everyone's now moving to Calgary, and now Calgary home prices are exploding. Calgary's so we're just shifting the problem, right? Exactly. Like it's becoming the new spot where everyone's moving. House prices are absolutely exploding, and we just keep moving it. It's just musical chair. They just keep moving to the next spot that's going to be too expensive.
So let's try to focus back in on the greenbelt stuff.
I don't think you can solve any of this stuff without addressing the demand side of the issue. For like, I think that's probably the biggest variable. Until you bring the immigration rates down and allow us to catch up, it could take us 10 years.
Listen, we have to
the demand side of the equation.
Okay, but let's be realistic. Like they've told us, we're not slowing down. Actually, I think we need more. So the only solution now is to figure out like how to build better, quicker, cheaper. Right.
I think Pierre Poliev would crank it back down to what it was under last year under Harper. It was 250,000. I think that Pierre, he hasn't explicitly said, but if Pierre, and he's way ahead in the polls, right? The last poll I saw, he was up like 39 or 37 to 29 over the Liberals. So if he comes into power for whatever reason over the next few years, we could see a drastic change in the immigration rate, which I think would be amazing for all these different variables. Because I think what the McKinsey bro and the BlackRock finance bro are optimizing for is a single variable of maximizing economic growth, right? We're going to blow up our demographic
GDP pyramid, total.
So a way that it's best for GDP. But by the way, healthcare, transportation, environment, agriculture is all going to shit. Another very interesting variable with all this stuff about agriculture, you know, I always hear the talking point from Ford about, listen, Ontario is fucking huge. It's the size of Texas and Montana combined, which is true. It's bigger than the country of France. We could fit, you know, half the world in Ontario, but the ag land, almost all the ag land in the province is in the southern part of the province. Only about 5% of Ontario is arable land. And we have 56% of all the prime ag land in the entire country. Like most of the ag land out in the prairies, you can grow wheat and corn and you know, rapeseed and that kind of stuff out there. But those kind of plants actually don't need very high quality soil. The stone fruits, you know, like you think about peach orchards or growing asparagus and strawberries and that kind of stuff. That's all like Holland Marsh and Niagara. So we're losing about 300 acres a day to sprawl in Ontario, which is mental. We've already lost about 18% of all of our ag land in Ontario since 1985, when I was born in 86. So we are in a very bad trajectory also with food security.
So it's your fault since you were born, things are just getting worse.
It's getting worse, man. Yeah, I know. I know. What can I say?
I think those stats are 100% true. Like, there's nothing that there is not true. I mean, how much total agricultural land do we have in Ontario, and what is the highest value in DRAP, right? In the Durham region alone, like, how much of that is that Class A type of farmland that can't be replaced? That's the real question.
Auditor General, I think she put it at 78% or something like that, is prime ag land, which is Class 1, 2, and 3. Like, there's seven classes of ag land, and 1, 2, and 3 are all the prime stuff where you can basically grow anything.
But you
most of Ontario is Class 7 where you can't grow anything.
You don't need this land for lab-grown meats. Yeah,
I agree. My girlfriend is actually a lab-grown woman, and although, speak, Jason, I wanted to make this joke earlier, but you mentioned the MAID program. My girlfriend took me to see Barbie last weekend, and I am now on the MAID program.
Yeah, you should get on the list before you saw it. Would have been a good idea.
Listen, with all that WEF talk, we should say you're not suicidal, right? I just want to make sure.
Yeah, let's make sure.
Right? Let's just make
all
sure.
Of us.
Just in case.
I'm very happy.
I'm very happy. Everything is good. I'm not suicidal.
So hold on. Yeah. Let's get back to the Greenbelt, because I'm confused. Because I've seen Doug Ford saying, like, we hear you. We're going to, are we going to change this? Are we going to rescind what we just did? And
I'm hearing the opposite.
Somebody doesn't kill us.
I'm hearing him saying we handled this appropriately, and I don't care what that report says. Yeah, we know what we did.
Maybe there was a couple of mistakes made. We're going to learn for next time.
Learn for our mistake. Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Well, it's weird because the day of, his response was guilty as charged. We're going to implement all the points that Bonnie Liza came up with, except for, we're not going to take that land back from my buddies that I rezoned, which is really
because the MZO is already typed. That thing is ready to go, and it's hot off the press.
Yeah, exactly. And then the weird thing is, on day two, and are we into day three now? I don't even know. But now he's like, oh no, it was actually done all cool. As far as I can tell, you know, he said that the the integrity commissioner is going to investigate the chief of staff to the Minister of Housing. It looks like to me they're setting that guy up as their fall man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe, like, worst case, maybe then you got to take out Steve Clark, depending on the heat. And worst case scenario, maybe Dougie himself gets torched. But I think, you know, this is pure speculation on my part. The most common form of corruption in provincial and municipal politics is corruption around residential real estate development.
Zoning. Yeah.
The zoning, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So let me thought experiment here. What is 1% of $8 billion, the valuation change in that land? That's $80 million, right? And the idea that there's not a numbered bank account in Switzerland with $80 million sitting in it, and $10 million for the chief of staff, $20 million is for Steve Clark, and there's $50 million for Doug Ford. Pure speculation. Please don't, you know, sue me, Doug Ford and these guys. That is an absolute possibility. So even if these guys get torched, they're like, hey, man, that's generational wealth, life-changing wealth. Yeah. Even if I
see ya, suckers.
See ya, suckers. And who knows, maybe they, like, you know, with Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, maybe they've got a tape of a hooker peeing on Doug Ford, and that's why he has to do all this stuff anyways. Who knows?
There's a good chance, right?
If any one of you guys owned a piece of land right now in one of the areas that was released from the Greenbelt, how would your opinion change?
If you got that kind of if you just owned
your farm, you're minding your business, you bought it for $800,000 10 years ago, and you thought you'd be there forever. And then all of a sudden now your 40 acres is worth, you know, let's call it $40 million.
Do normal people still own those things?
After I leave the Bugatti dealership, I would then figure out what to do. Now, listen, the thing is with the Greenbelt, and this is actually something that a lot of people don't talk about, is that I remember I was mentored by a very, very successful real estate developer when I was younger, and I was door knocking out in the Greenbelt area, just to sort of talk to people and kind of see, like, if they would ever consider selling their land. And you talk to people who, they were farmers, and they're like, our retirement plan was to sell this land off eventually. Like, that was our long-term game plan. We would work and be farmers, and then eventually we'd sell it off to a developer. And that was kind of what a lot of farmers did. Some farmers just came in and they got greenbelted, and it was worth nothing. but the guys across the street were worth, you know, $50 million. So a lot of people, a lot of farmers got screwed by this entire thing, like previously. And so I do think there are some people now who are probably like, wow, okay, I'm back. Although I don't know how many of them are still own it, but it was a real thing back in the day. A lot of people kind of got screwed by.
Do you know who got screwed the biggest though? Is the landowners we're talking about. The big guys, because they were buying in the 90s and 2001 and
absolutely.
Two, before the Greenbelt Act came out. And so they were like, whoa, we're going to build this great land. And we got this great 20-year plan. And then they were the ones who were left holding the bag.
Now we got to find a guy.
20 years.
Yeah. We got to make a guy who's going to undo this. Fucking unlock this mess now.
It's all going to start with a Dixon Road apartment and his brother, Rob. All right. Start from there and then we'll go
a little bit of crack.
We'll go forward. Okay.
Sure. I mean, I don't feel too sorry for the developers who, you know, might have bought land back in the 90s and then they can't develop it now if it's in the DRAP or the Greenbelt or whatever. Because all those guys, them, their cousins, their second cousins, they're all driving Bugattis. Go up to a country club in Vaughan or Woodbridge or any of the other suburbs of Toronto. They're all driving Lamborghinis, man. So they might have taken a hit on some speculative properties. But, you know, I don't think they're going to be joining the MAID program as I am after seeing.
No, but you know what? Speaking of country clubs, did you see, you know, the Richmond Hill Country Club at Bathurst and Highway 7? That thing just put in an application now because I guess
they're developing it.
But not developing it, bro. There's like 40 buildings going on this thing. I was like, I thought maybe three or four.
It's insane.
I think that's great. Like, as an environmentalist myself, I think if it's the project that I think you're talking about, the former golf club,
current golf club.
I think they're developing 30% of that land, and then the rest of it's going to be remaining green space. There's a lot of residents, I know, environmentalists who are pissed, and I'm telling them, like, listen, guys, if they don't build these units here, they're going to make the argument we need to build it out into the Greenbelt. It's much better to build these units on a freaking golf course. That's a waste of space anyways, in my opinion. That's a terrible sport.
Controversial.
And they're keeping 70% of it green anyways. Build in my backyard, baby. Build it here, because the alternative is not better.
Well, not only that, but it's on Bathurst and it's got services, it's got infrastructure there, right? Like there's stuff there. It's a no-brainer to build that. I mean, really, it's a no-brainer to build that. I mean, you look at, this is a controversial take, but Oakdale, big golf course, you know, like right next to the 400, like in Toronto, that's a huge piece of property that they could absolutely build. I mean, it's massive. You guys know where the Oakdale golf course is in Toronto?
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that there's all these, you know, there's big chunks of land that can still be done with something. And listen, I mean, my father would kill me because he's a big avid golfer, but you know, these are, to have a massive golf course in the middle of a city, I don't know, it might be
like the golf courses are mostly
relocate
sold.
And
they're all getting offers, most of them are sold, they'll all be,
most of them are going to be they'll all be
so that's a good point, is, you know, the golf courses, and I'm a golfer, you know, and it's hard to get a tee time, okay, this is hard for me to say, but they are a good spot to build, you know, they are, you know, pretty useful land, there's a few locations, and that would take up less green space. But are they willing to do it? And that's the thing, is the fastest streamline to us getting 50,000 more houses built over the next 10 years is in the hands of the biggest developers in the province. It's in the hands of the guys who paid the cheapest for the land so that they can sell it, right? And that they've got
the servicing from it,
who own the companies who do the servicing,
all
the construction companies, have it all in place. So I understand. Look, do I want to, you know, wipe out the Greenbelt? Not at all, right? But if somebody out there could do it, and I was sitting as a politician and I wasn't friends with them, and I would say, okay, I got Daryl running the Canadian real estate show over here. Obviously, and I got these guys with decades worth of experience and billions of dollars backing them. I'm going to pick them to be able to give me the best chance of being able to house people for the greater good of the population of Ontario. Cause we're in an affordability crisis. And the only way that I can come up with it, because I'm not smart enough to be able to figure out it on the immigration side, because I'm a realtor, is create more supply. The more supply we get, it'll lead to more affordability for my kids and, you know,
so
future to come.
Explain to me on a macro level how giving the wealthiest landowners of the land this beautiful golden opportunity how that is going to actually create the affordable housing, because, okay, is there something that forces them to like not make a profit on this land?
Well, so, you know, I was going to say what, like the one thing they could do, and this is something that should have been part of this deal, was look, you can, we'll give this to you, but there's a cap. You cannot sell these properties for more than X. You cannot, like these cannot be $4 million, you know, ravine lot, 6,000 square foot custom homes. Can't do that. These have to be a max of $850,000 or $800,000.
But they cost me $890 to build. How am I going to do
it? Hopefully if the land, I know, well, hopefully if the land value, if the land didn't cost them that much, like that sometimes is a huge
piece of the pie, right? Interest rates are high now, Dougie. Like, I don't know how we're going to do this, bro.
That farmer gave me an 8% VTB. I've been paying him for the last
That's true. I've been paying for 25 years. Yeah. I mean, there's no,
don't forget your children. Your daughter's wedding was pretty expensive.
Daryl, to answer your question, the market will control it. The market will control it. And they if you create that much more housing and the demand side, you know,
so no more affordable housing.
Maybe the prices just stay the same for 10 years. Whatever it is, they're getting out of control. So if we don't do something, how much more unaffordable our house is going to be in 10 years if we didn't have some sort of aggressive plan to build?
Yeah, this could be. Because I don't listen financially, and this is like with my like sort of finance like lender hat on. We can't have homes correct by 50%. It cannot happen. It would be just a mass chaos. If home prices drop by 50%, even 30% from where they are today, anyone who's bought in the last 3 years is going to be massively underwater, and you're going to start seeing people walking away from homes. You're going to see like a 2008 US style type of thing, because people are not going to stay in a property that's upside down for that long. They just won't. Not if the interest rates are that high. Canadians are notorious for, you know, they will not, they don't do that. Canadians are usually pretty good. That's why our default rates are really, really low. But I think that we couldn't have this. So there's, at some point, there's going to be a base level. And are we there now? Maybe that, like right now, the average home price is in Canada, $760,000. That's just where it's going to be. And hopefully it doesn't go much higher. And we just have to keep on adding more supply to what's going on. But my concern is what would happen if there was a big market downturn. I worry about financially how that would look for everyday people, to be honest.
Gundabad, what do you, I want to hear your thoughts on some of the things I said on, you know, that this was the best option that we had.
I don't know. Were you playing devil's advocate, or do you, are those your actual personal beliefs on those issues?
So one pretty is freaking controversial. I represent sellers who sell land. So my interests are aligned with helping my clients at the end of the day. I'm not big enough and my thoughts aren't strong enough to really care one way or the other. At the end of the day, you know, what happens is the market decides what the market's going to do. So again, I'm playing more of a devil's advocate role here because I want to hear your opinions. But like, again, there are some truth to it. I definitely think that what you're saying is 100% true. Like, I'm not denying any of the ways that this came about. It's definitely what it is. But I just want to hear your thoughts, because what I'm saying is the narrative on the other side. That's why I'm saying it.
TK, you filthy, filthy capitalist. How dare you? How dare you? No,
he's a realtor. Yeah. He's a realtor.
Yeah.
Says it right there, right?
You make money on the transactions, right? No, I get it. I think the huge problem with that argument is that there is a shite ton of land, right? The land between Hamilton and Pickering, again, in and around the existing built up areas, it's more than 250 square kilometers. It's close to 300 square kilometers. That's bigger than the size of Paris, France. The idea that they need to take out of the Greenbelt because that land is so expensive, they are unable to profitably build on that. I do not believe it, because the whole thing about a free market mechanism is a seller will not price their land that's so expensive that no one will buy it, because otherwise they're never going to sell it, right? Like, that's the whole thing about the fluidity of a free market. I don't think that makes sense at all. There's so many variables in this. It's such a complex problem. But land, even Doug Ford's very own affordable housing task force, who, by the way, was not ran by David fucking Suzuki, save the butterflies. It was ran by the guy who runs Scotia Capital. He's an investment banker, right? He's like Patrick Bateman. He probably eats babies and drinks champagne every morning for breakfast. This is a guy who doesn't care about the environment, right? The conclusion of that report is we do not need any more land in the land supply. It's all about cutting regulations. It's cutting red tape. Some of the things that Jason's been talking about that I've been hearing, right? One of the huge things is ending exclusionary zoning in all the big cities, which, by the way, the city of Toronto did
That's about a month ago. Dumbest thing ever.
Toronto was exclusionary zoning. You couldn't build anything other than, you know, detached single family households. So the argument, I just do not think holds up. The developers would love that to be true, because then it gives them political cover to do things, sneaky shit, sneaky weasel shit like this, right? To get Doug Ford to try to rezone their land. I would also point out that you do not see the biggest developers, the Carlo Fadanis, the Peter Gilgans of Mattamy Homes. These guys' names never come up with this sneaky corruption shit because they do not participate in it, right? From my understanding too, the DeGasperis family is a big family. The guys who are doing this stuff in with the Greenbelt, that's not the whole DeGasperis family. Some of the DeGasperis family, from what I hear, wants nothing to do with that because they're like, dude, I think a big residential real estate developer's worst nightmare is having their name on the front of the Globe and Mail. They do not want to be out there. So the guys that are doing this shit are not the best and the brightest of our developer communities out there, right? There's a huge amount of demonization, especially like in the environmental circles of developers. But I have to say, it's like any group of humans, there's good apples and there's bad apples. You know, some developers are fantastic people, like I'm sure Jason is. He seems like a decent guy.
I'm not a developer. Listen, I have to say, I'm not a developer. I'm a lender. I'm the guy that, you know, I used to give these guys the money to build these things.
No nice developers on this show, that's for sure.
Jason, if you're a lender,
nice developers don't make any money.
I wanna ask you about this. Michael Rice took out a $2 million loan at, I believe, a 22% interest rate to buy some of this land in the, I think it's in King County, actually, that was removed from the Greenbelt. Don't you think the bankers, I forget if it was RBC or CIBC or who gave him the money, don't you think the bankers probably knew that he had inside information that that land was going to get taken out before they gave him $80 million? Or do you think that's why they stuck the 22% interest rate on that land?
That sounds like a real tricky question. Right? What do you think?
What did they praise that sucker at?
But hold on a sec. Okay, all this shenanigans and bullshit aside, the reality of the whole situation is that one way or another, whether people like it or not, that family has got to be involved in the solution. Because like Jason was saying, I mean, there's only so many people that can really build shit fast enough in this city, in this country. So the way that everybody went about doing it was very, very naughty and should definitely be frowned upon. But whether it's the outskirts of Pickering or like wherever it is, those guys are going to end up with the land or a nice big chunk of it. So we just have to have a better way of doing it where we're like, okay, listen, the Gaspers family, we need housing here. Like, we're going to give you a chunk of it. Just make sure that it's like, I don't know how you cap it, but like some way of doing like, okay, 50%, you can do what you got to do, but 50% you can't. But then just as I'm saying that, you realize, well, guess what happens to one of the 50%? It makes up for the other one. And then everybody's fucked again, like inclusionary zoning. So how do you get out of this mess? But I promise you, at the end of the answer, it involves that family, their friends, all these big developers, and the government is part of the solution.
For sure. Like, here's the thing. I don't buy the argument, though, that, like, you know, if the Rice family disappeared tomorrow and they were sent into exile in Newfoundland, Mattamy Homes and the Gilgans would suck up all their equipment, suck up all their labor, and they'd be like, hey, baby. Awesome. I'll do it too. And if you're going to tell me that Peter Gilgan and Mattamy Homes is not more competent than the Rice family, I don't believe it. I don't believe it at all.
No, listen.
That shit done.
They are for sure. I mean, listen, Mattamy and Orlando, I mean, they both very, very competent. I've met Silvio DeGasperis. He's a very nice, very smart guy. He really is. The thing with DeGasperis is that they have, TAC has multiple, like, they have a lot of businesses, right? They're not just developers. They do the servicing. They do everything. The thing, the reason why I think it's a good thing that they're one of the ones involved in this is the fact that, like Daryl said earlier, they can pull this off very quickly. They're not reliant on third part. Like, they come in and it's like they're good to go. Like, I've seen them put up communities very, very quickly. I mean, in different, like in Richmond Hill, I mean, they build everywhere. They're competent. They build good quality things and they are fast. I mean, I don't know if that plays into any of this stuff, but I will say, and they're obviously extremely well funded. So, like I said in the video, I made a video about this. You know, was it very naughty? Absolutely. Was it shady? 100%. Are the people who ended up getting this the right people to pull this off? They are. I mean, like that, like if we're just talking, yeah, should have gone to the open market for sure. The thing that I worry about is how many articles do you see where, you know, developers are going bankrupt with $700 million projects that they can't finish because they're out of money and they're sitting all framed? Or you like that to me is worrisome. And I think that should worry the government as well. Like, the right people need to buy these things and develop them, because you don't want to run into that. You don't want to have this thing where the lender's now calling like they're in default. The lender now has to try to sell 500 homes that are all framed. You have to bring in another person. It's an absolute disaster, right? You've got, you know, everyone's putting, you know, their liens on everything. I'd much rather go to a well-funded developer that can finish it. But again, that's just me. It might be a controversial take. I don't know, but
just so you know, there was about 400 acres that just traded on the open market that Coghlan Homes sold to that majority stake landowner and various subsidies. So like, there has been an opportunity for other people to get involved. And, you know, they put on the open market. It was quiet. They weren't really getting much activity. It's a big 400 acres. How many people could actually buy that much land at one shot? It was like 7 or 8 parcels. And, you know, they bought it, right? So some of the prices they've paid are much higher and there is opportunity. But like, to your point, Jason, they're the best fitted for the job. Like, they're the ones who are most likely going to get it done. And that's what I think, to me, the provincial government's thought process has been. Maybe also the people who are helping them. There's a ton of things there that they probably did wrong.
For sure.
But, you know, they definitely had to go with their best bet, which was, who owns the most land? How convenient is that location? Where is it going to be? Who's that going to service? How close is it to transit? And how fast are these homes going to get built?
That
I don't have an idea on another location.
Yeah, I think a lot of those points, though, man, like, there, it's not close to transit, right? It's going to take 5 years minimum to build that infrastructure out there from Pickering. And you're giving a lot of credit to D Ford about his thought process. I think there might be $50 million in a Panamanian bank account, numbered bank account.
Why Panama?
Did it just transfer over from a different island?
It's in a Swiss one before.
Like, as the episode's gone on.
Part in Panama, part in Switzerland. But again, like the Rice family and, you know, this part of the De Gasperis family that owns this land that's been taken on the Greenbelt, are they competent? This is going back to the same thing. Yeah, it's like, you're telling me that Carlo Fidani and Peter Gilgan can't do the exact same thing, probably even better? There's no fucking way. There's absolute substitute actors out there that can accomplish the same thing. But guess what? Those guys don't want anything to do with it because they know it's shit. And these investments, like, one big thing is people don't realize is that the federal minister of the environment, Stephen Guilbeault, I don't even know how to pronounce his name. It's a weird French name. And he's step in at any time and shut all this stuff down, because the DRAP, for example, was actually given from the federal government to the province of Ontario, I believe, something like 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And there are all these covenants in there about how it can never be developed. You have to consult with the federal government before you do anything with this, et cetera, et cetera. So we could get, you know, Doug Ford could muddle his way through this. And then at the last hour, Stephen Guilbeault steps in.
You could veto the MZO. Yeah. I've heard he's done that before. Like, he's got the authority to be able to do that before. But Doug doesn't think so.
Doug is a crazy man that's on a diet of 100% Timbits. So I don't know how well his brain is functioning, to be honest.
I'm just saying, he doesn't think so. Like, whether it's true or not, he's very certain that one scenario is not going to happen, right? I don't know what he's basing that information on.
Same thing they base all their information on. Like, whatever they need to say for the day, right? Mm-hmm. It's bullshit. They just need somebody to back up their bullshit. And look at, like, how it just takes the right amount of money to find somebody or the right buddy to back up your bullshit, right? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
It's just
Absolutely.
A number. It's just a number. Well, listen, gentlemen, this has been a super long, wonderful episode. We appreciate that both of you came. I'm sorry to layer you on top of each other. You're both worthy of your own episode. Absolutely. That's for damn sure. So we'd love
this was fun. I liked it, Gundo. This was fun. I mean, honestly, I think it was actually nice having the two of us. Like it created.
It was
like
nice. It was great.
You know,
shout out your channels and your accounts so that people can follow you.
For the three people still watching.
Yeah, so at LenderBidding on TikTok, and if you need a mortgage in Ontario, let us know. I mean, our team are amazing. We just had a feature done in the Globe Mail about how we're disrupting the private mortgage industry in Canada about 2 weeks ago. So yeah, check us out. We're happy to help you.
Cool.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm Gundo Bad Ontario. I'm on mainly on TikTok and Instagram. I do all kind of nature education about Ontario. It's kind of like Discovery Channel for Ontario. That's what I'm all about.
Awesome.
Love it. Great conversation. Insightful videos. Guys. Not like this place where you got to like weed through the garbage.
We're 3 years in. Hearing. We haven't figured it out yet.
We're going to get there though, TK. We're going to do it together. Thanks, guys. Have a great rest of the weekend. What day is today? Happy Sunday, everybody. TK.
Till next week.
TK.
Don't swear again.
Yeah, I did it.